Hello, folks, and welcome to another lecture in the ongoing series for the SOCH 122 class. If my voice sounds a little off, it's because I'm ill, and I'm running a bit of a fever, I think, and I tried taking my temperature, and for some reason my thermometer doesn't work, but I can tell I'm running a fever. So if occasionally I stop and take a drink of water, I hope you'll be understanding of that. Today we are up to a new section, which is on interaction groups and organization, and we will primarily be focusing upon groups and organization, since I think that is the more interesting parts of the chapter. And I think I'll try to do is to give you my own take on the subject, my own particular version of what this means. What is a group? What is an organization? How do those things relate to each other, etc.? First, let's talk about what a group is not. A group is not a crowd. A group is not an aggregate. A group is not a category. Okay, so what are crowds, aggregates, and categories? A crowd refers to people who happen to be in the same place at the same time, and they are usually responding to some type of an event. Could be a horrifying event, like somebody standing on top of the building threatening to jump off. It could be a bunch of people in an elevator going from one floor to another, and perhaps the elevator gets stuck, and people have to learn how to deal with one another on a temporary basis. So that's what a crowd is. A crowd is basically people who are in the same place at the same time, but they are there usually because of some type of either upsetting or otherwise emotional experience. We've all been in crowds, I assume, at one time or another. An aggregate. An aggregate is more general than a crowd. It is simply people who are in the same place at the same time, for any reason. So, for instance, people standing on a street corner waiting to cross the street. People who are in a bus commuting to work or commuting wherever. People in a plane who are flying from one place to another, just a regular commuter line, not a charter line, so the people in the plane presumably would not know one another. People who are in an elevator, but there's no particular catastrophe or tragedy. They're simply going from one floor to another. That is an aggregate. Finally, a category. A category would be like all the people at Johnson County Community College with red hair, or with brown hair, or with black hair, or with blonde hair. Or it could be all the people at Johnson County Community College who are over 6 feet tall, or all the people at Johnson County Community College who are under 6 feet tall. Sometimes categories can be rather significant. For example, I remember when I got my driver's license in New York, and in New York, it's the age to get a driver's license is older than it is in most states. With driver's ed, you can get a license at 17. Otherwise, you have to wait until you're 18. That little pause was me taking a sip of water. Although I took driver's ed, I did wait anyway until I was 18 to get my driver's license. In fact, I actually failed the road test the first time around. The road examiner, whatever he's called, tricked me. There was a stop sign that was kind of hidden in the brush, and I didn't see it. And so I went right through the stop sign. That was obviously intentional upon the road examiner's part, and then I knew right then and there that I had failed the road test, so I had to take it again a couple of weeks later. When I got my license, I found out how much my insurance was going to be, and I was absolutely horrified. Right now, I pay approximately $600 every 6 months for my insurance. This was back in 1974. In 1974 in New York. Real money. Not money adjusted for inflation. Real money. I would have had to pay $1,000 every 6 months to drive a car. And that was just for collision. That was just for collision. That was just basic auto insurance. Very, very expensive. So I was very upset. 4 years later, my sister got her driver's license, and she had to pay nothing. She was automatically covered under our parents' insurance policy. I thought that was extraordinarily unfair, but in fact it was not, because auto insurance is based upon statistical averages. And it just so happens that males under the age of 25 have the highest rate of accidents of any age category. Remember, we're talking about categories, of any age category in the United States. When I passed 25, my insurance rates went down significantly. But I was still upset. I thought that was, at the time, I thought that was a tremendous injustice. I really did not understand much about statistics, if anything. So I just thought that was really, really, really unjust that I would have to pay that much money for auto insurance. So that category was very important to me, because I was placed into a category which involved my paying a really, really high rate of insurance, whereas my sister, at the same age as I was 4 years earlier, was placed into a category where she literally had to pay no insurance at all because she was automatically covered under our parents' insurance policy. So categories can be important, but neither crowds, aggregates, nor categories are groups. Why? Because in order to be a group, a collection of people has to have a shared sense of identity. People have to feel as though they belong to that group. People have to say, yes, I am in that group, and I am not in that group. There has to be some kind of social structure, some type of organization, meaning there are shared roles or shared guidelines for behavior which exist in that group. None of those existed in a crowd, an aggregate, or a category. So groups are different than crowds, aggregates, and categories. Because sociology can be defined, and sometimes is defined, as the social scientific study of groups, we are very specific in sociology about what precisely constitutes a group and what does not. And so we are very careful in terms of making a distinction between a group and a non-group. Non-groups, again, crowds, aggregates, and categories. Now let's get on and talk about some examples of groups, just a few examples. First, there is a common kind of group that most of us have experienced throughout our lives. It's called an in-group and an out-group. The in-group is the group that you are a member of. The out-group is the group that you are outside of. So if you, for example, are in a fraternity or sorority, and I would assume some of you may eventually, when you transfer to a university or college, end up in a fraternity or a sorority, that fraternity or sorority will be your in-group. The fraternities or sororities that you are not members of, perhaps they are your rivals, they are your out-groups. If you are on a sporting team, that sporting team is your in-group. The team that you are competing against is your out-group. So in-groups and out-groups can be very important in our lives. Second example, dyads, spelled D-Y-A-D-S, and triads, spelled T-R-I-A-D-S. Dyads and triads are exactly what they sound like. A dyad is a group of two, and a triad is a group of three. But there is a great deal more significance to dyads and triads than simply the number of people in those groups. For example, if you have a dyad, it is impossible to have democracy. You can have consensus, the two people can agree, but if you take a vote and one person votes one way, the other person votes the other way, then there's a, no decision can be made. You're in a catch-22 situation. You're stalemated. There really is nothing you can do. Whereas with a triad, that third person in the group can break the deadlock, can break the tie. Also, the old expression, two's company and three is a crowd. There is some validity to that. If you are in a dyad, there is a great deal of intimacy in a dyad. Like, say, two people are newlyweds. They feel a great deal of love for one another, great deal of affection for one another. Then a baby is born. Suddenly, the dyad has become a triad. Now, the attention, or much of the attention, that the couple directed at each other needs to be directed at this newborn baby. So the level of intimacy declines. So intimacy levels can differ between dyads and triads. Let's talk about another distinction between types of groups. Primary groups and secondary groups. A primary group is a group that you are in primarily because of intimacy. Now, originally, when the term primary group was coined by a sociologist named Charles Horton Cooley, he meant your immediate family. That was his idea of a primary group. But what happened through research was that it was found that not all immediate families have a sense of intimacy. In fact, in some immediate families, there is even hatred. People may dislike each other immensely. So, in other words, not all families are loving and kind. And so, these days, we don't define a primary group as being a family, although some families are primary groups. We define a primary group as any group which is based on intimacy. So it can, for instance, be a group of close friends. A secondary group, on the other hand, is a group which is primarily based on the performance of tasks. So this class, although we don't see each other face to face, we are a secondary group. We exist for the purpose of performing tasks. And when this semester ends, after so many weeks, this secondary group will cease to exist. And perhaps none of us will ever have any contact with each other again, or many of us may have no contact with each other again. Because the only reason a secondary group exists is for the accomplishment of tasks, and that's it. Now, a problem sometimes exists when people confuse primary with secondary groups. For example, you may start a new job, and people may be very friendly. In general, most people are friendly. In general, there are always some exceptions, but generally speaking, most people are friendly. That does not mean that they are your friends. That does not mean that they can necessarily be trusted, for example. So you may go to somebody in your workplace and tell them a confidential secret, and they may spread it all over, and you may end up losing your job as a result. In other words, they have just stabbed you in the back. So, a lot of companies, for example, have regulations against what they sometimes call fraternizing, or fraternizing in the workplace, because they are concerned over issues like that developing. Or, for instance, say if two people working in the same office begin dating, then they break up, as often happens. Will they still be able to work together in the same office? Maybe, but maybe not. So that's why fraternizing in the workplace is generally discouraged in secondary groups. In other words, there is a distinction between a primary and secondary group. Now, let's talk a bit about organizations. Organizations are basically large secondary groups. For instance, Johnson County Community College is an organization. Sometimes in sociology, we call organizations complex organizations or formal organizations. Same thing. Organization, complex organization, formal organization all refer to the same thing. The difference between a regular secondary group and an organization is basically size. So, for instance, this class is not an organization. We are a secondary group. But Johnson County Community College as a whole is an organization. Because organizations are larger than other secondary groups, they can commonly last for a much longer period of time. So even after this semester is finished, there will be another semester, and another semester, and another semester. And in each semester, this course will be taught over and over and over again, as long as there are new students that are interested in taking the course. So even though I was not here as a professor when this college started, the college was here before I came here. And I would assume that after I retire, the college will also continue to be here. In other words, the college is not dependent upon me. The college is not dependent upon you. The college is not dependent upon any of us. The college exists independently of any of us in this discussion. Because it's large, and because it has a kind of permanence that regular secondary groups don't have. Now, the most interesting, perhaps, type of secondary group, or organization in this case, is a bureaucracy. Bureaucracy can be thought of as kind of a triangular type organization, not triangular literally, but metaphorically, in the sense that the higher up you go in the triangle, the fewer people, but the higher up you go, the more power. So, for instance, let's use Johnston County Community College as an example. At Johnston County Community College, like most colleges and universities, we actually have two bureaucracies. We have an administrative bureaucracy, and we also have a faculty bureaucracy, and we'll talk about each of them as soon as I finish taking this sip of water. The administrative bureaucracy begins with the president, then below the president are the executive vice presidents, then below the executive vice presidents are the vice presidents, below the vice presidents are the deans, and below the deans are the chairs. In the faculty bureaucracy, you have professors or full professors at the top, which is what I am now, and have been for the last 15 or so years. Then below professors, you have associate professors. Then below associate professors, you have assistant professors. And some universities have a rank below assistant professors called instructor or lecturer. We don't have that, but that's common in some universities and some larger universities, not so common in community colleges. But the same kind of thing exists. Generally speaking, more responsibility is expected of professors than of assistant professors. More responsibility is expected of the president of the college than of the chairs of individual departments. And there is more power, too. There is more power at the top than there is at the bottom. But there are more people at the bottom than there are at the top, generally. So a term that we sometimes use for that kind of imbalance is the iron law of oligarchy. Oligarchy, which is spelled O-L-I-G-A-R-C-H-Y, refers to power. And it means that there is inevitably in any organization, complex or formal organization, there is inevitably going to be an imbalance in power between the top and the bottom. That's just the way bureaucracies work. One of the more interesting discussions of bureaucracies was actually not even done by a sociologist, but was done by a popular writer named Larry Peter, in a book he wrote called The Peter Principle. And what he said is that people are promoted to their levels of maximum incompetence. It's a very negative description of bureaucracy. Here's what he means by that, or meant by that. He's long dead. Say a person is doing a really good job in a factory. There is a foreman in the factory. When that foreman is busy, this worker will become, in effect, the assistant foreman. Not officially, but informally. So, at some point, the foreman retires. People in management look around and they say, well, who can we get to replace the foreman? And then people say, well, that person who was a really good substitute for the foreman. So they ask that person, he or she says yes, and that person becomes the new foreman. That person is even a better foreman than his or her predecessor. Few more years go by. A position opens up in middle-level management, a white-collar job, an office job. They look around and they think, well, you know, we'd like to hire somebody from within the company. So they say, well, let's ask that foreman if he or she might want the job. So they do. Person thinks, well, you know, I'm really a people person. I like working with people. The idea of sitting in an office the whole day sounds very unappealing, but by the same token, if I take this job, my salary will almost double. So the person says yes. That person becomes only a mediocre office manager. The person is not fired because the person's not bad enough to be fired, but the person is not promoted either. That person has reached his or her level of maximum incompetence. So that's a very negative view of how bureaucracies work. And that is the lecture for this week. I hope you do well, and I hope I'm feeling better next week. Have a good one. Take care.